Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. Oh man, we are we're like not quite leading up to a blood week, right? This is what everybody wants to know when they see Jason Kirk in the streets, is they're like, hello, Jason Kirk, Dean of Blood Week, High Priest of Blood Week in college football. Are we indeed at a blood week? And typically what Jason Kirk has to say is no.
No. I think Ryan is the high priest, seeing as this was all originally his fault. I think I'm the youth pastor.
Well, you are the Aaron to my Moses. Can we
actually
do that?
I'm the like holy archivist. Because I'm the one who spent a day at the mall food court going through the old records to compile a spreadsheet. I'm the monk in the abbot. Is that what it's called?
You're the one who's got to stay behind in Derry when we all defeat the clown the first time.
You know in the Fifth Element when the aliens come and they're like, here is the weird brick you will need, and they give it to like the old monk.
Yeah.
You are that, and I'm the weirdly shaped alien.
They give me that
too well.
Yeah, they give me that brick, and I'm like, ah, yes, Minnesota created this brick in 1937. I remember it well.
Row the brick.
Throw the brick, as someone did to Bill Curry at Alabama.
Yeah,
because he won an SEC title. That asshole.
I have a. By the way, like, are you also the knight that is left behind to watch the Grail? The one who just sits in a cave for like, you know, what, 1500 years?
The original blogger.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Spencer, you're the closest to 1500 years old. This has to be.
I am. Yeah, that would be. It would be. I would spend that long in a cave waiting for someone to just give me the go.
You
right?
know what's shocking about that scene? That dude is still wearing all his clothes.
Like, yeah.
If you were just guarding the Grail, which has been remained untouched for centuries, you'd take your pants off, right?
Anyway, this is BannerSociety.com.
Yes.
Which we kept forgetting to mention. Now seems like a good time to bring that up.
It's the Shutdown Fullcast, the only college football podcast on
the
internet.
Well, the internet's only college football podcast.
There might be
some offline ones.
Yeah, there might be some Internet of Things college football podcasts. Frankly, when those come for you and your family, we're going to laugh.
Yeah.
Those of you out there, if you listen to a Usenet or an ARPNet college football podcast.
Or on the other end of the spectrum, if your smart fridge has opinions about Notre Dame.
And it does.
Move.
Also, if it's a Notre Dame fan, your fridge is watching you because it's a cop. Cop fridge!
There's a reason they only come in black and white.
Damn.
Whoop!
now we're never going to get that Smeg partnership, so...
Wow, that's not where I thought that was going.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. That was a good turn. You
now,
know?
Now I'm experiencing different kinds of nausea.
Hey, everyone's having a good time here on the Shutdown Fullcast.
I keep waiting for us to hand out the podcast as a mixtape, right?
Yeah.
Podcast mixtape. It's a mixtape. Oh, we should send Alex and Richard to Baton Rouge with mixtapes. Hey, welcome to our production meeting.
We have literally posted a transcribed version before. There's nothing we could
We've
do that would be sillier than that.
We've hijacked the PAPN feed, which went great. Yeah, we're pretty much, all possibilities are open here.
There are no ideas sillier than what we've already done.
What about one of those like engraved wax cylinders?
Yeah, we'll shoot it
into
space.
Oh, like a player piano that would just play us?
Yes.
We fire it to Neptune, and whoever lands on Neptune is like, shit, we got to leave this solar system. This place
That's
sucks.
Right. The aliens who get there, they're like, we can't attack Earth. Cassio Dog is too powerful.
We'll be the Earth Defense Force. They'll be like, ugh, no intelligent life here.
Let's
Cassio get- Dog, 2001 theme.
Brr. 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 I would probably play that on the bongos, right? The
sure.
The bongo pads. Before we get into our material in earnest, we do have, and there is material, I promise.
But
it
first, a
laugh.
Brief digression
it
from
is
Bongo
to
Cassio
laugh.
Dog.
We do have some live shows coming up. Ryan, if you would, can you brief everybody on those, our locations? Because I forget the dates. I know that they're Jacksonville and
Friday,
Charlotte.
Friday, October 4th, Charlotte, North Carolina. Location TBD, but we're getting close. We're narrowing in. Yeah. I will share, because I don't think it's going to be for either of these. I recently decided I would really like us to one day do a live show at a planetarium where nobody ever sees us. They just lie back in the seats and look at the night sky and hear us do our stupid podcast.
Casio dog, Star Trek theme.
Friday, November 1st, Jacksonville, Florida. Venue also not yet announced, although we're also getting close there. I am reasonably confident tickets for these are going to go on sale sooner rather than later. More than a week before the show, at least. How about that? Will you take that?
I'll take that.
I'd be thrilled with that.
Okay.
I think my favorite part of us remembering to do podcast business on the Evergreen episode is that this is designed to be listened to, you know, a month after the show. So if you missed it, good luck.
Yeah, that's right. Idiot.
Gotta hit it.
So this is another in our historical series on blood weeks, which are the weeks when the college football rankings all go completely to shit, particularly at the top 10 level. We have done a week one episode on 1990. We have done a bowl season episode on 2014 when the SEC West was completely full of shit. And now we're going to sort of make our way through the rest of the regular season bit by bit. Later in the year, you can do this on a weekly basis, and we'll try and keep up with that as best we can. There'll be some multi-week episodes, but
we will fail.
Yeah, if we try, we will not succeed. That is our solemn vow to you, dear podcast reader. But it's time to get caught up on what happens after week one. What happens after week one is September, and so here's the thing about trying to create a week by week thing for college football seasons throughout history is these were not standardized or formalized in any way from era to era. A week one in 1950 means a completely different thing than a week one in 2019. So what I did when I was putting together the spreadsheet of all this shit was I counted backward from Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is the one thing you can count on everything pivoting around. So a week three, for example, in 2019 terms, if you take that in 1940, week three might be week one because the season was so much shorter. But this at least standardizes things a little bit. Where it gets really awkward is in September. This is when, like a long time ago, college football didn't even start until like mid-September. So either way, this is sort of the catch-up, catch-all. We're going to do basically weeks two, three, and four kind of all at once in a big pile here. You'll see what we mean. So I think what we had an order that we talked about before. All right, I remember.
Killing it.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Remember, I'm the one with the script.
Yeah.
And even I can't. So 1984 is what we're going to start with here. The concept is Blood Week. Are we going to talk Blood Week with 1984? No, we're going to talk Blood Month. Because 1984 opens with a fucking carnival of insanity. This was a season that people often point to it as the one year when the underdog finally came out on top. BYU was the champ. It was the last time a non-power won the national title. This was kind of the one year that vindicated, you know, everything about the little guy. And how we got there was completely fucking insane. Brian, what do you got?
First of all, let's also remember that Who did BYU play in their national their effective national championship game, the Holiday Bowl?
6-6 Michigan.
And why did they play 6-6 Michigan? Because like five other teams said, no, your payout is too low, including Boston College. So
man, you couldn't pay off. I'm sorry, that Range Rover, it's not paid for.
And it never will be, because debt is our greatest asset. Boston College Athletics. Here we go. All right, so here are the preseason top five from 1984. Auburn, in order. Auburn, Nebraska, Pitt, Clemson, UCLA. Here are how many losses each of those teams had by the first October poll. Auburn, 2 losses. Nebraska, 1 loss. Pitt, 4 losses.
Yeah.
Clemson, 2 losses, UCLA, 1. None of the top five escaped September with their record intact. Here's what else happened in September before October had begun. the number one team in the country had lost 3 times. The number two team had lost once. The number three team had lost twice. Let's kick it off in week 0 with Auburn and Miami playing in New Jersey, naturally. This was Jimmy Johnson's first year. Miami wins this game on the strength of Bernie Kosar playing extremely well and Bo Jackson playing just kind of good. He had a fumble in this game as well. This is a Miami team that's coming off a national title. They're ranked number 10. Auburn's ranked number 1. This is not a terribly, like, crazy outcome because, you know, this is the defending national champion. This is Auburn fucking up with expectations. These are all things we're used to. So not too weird so far. Let's jump to what Jason has labeled week 0.5, where Pitt, number 3 at the time, they do not end the season there, as you can guess, loses at home to unranked BYU. Given the fact that we've already established that Pitt was not a good team this year, we're okay with that. We can move on. Week 1, now things get really stupid. So, Miami jumps all the way up to number 1. They play number 14, Michigan. Yeah, they lose that game. Number 7, Notre Dame loses to unranked Purdue. Purdue beats, in 1984, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Michigan. Spencer, what do you think their final record was in a year where they won those 3 games?
5-6.
7-5.
Not far. Not far off.
God. How did you, like, Purdue, this is why you can't have nice things.
No, I maintain this is because they're such an intelligent school with so many smart people, they realized we can only win 7 games, so we need to pick the right 7. I bet those 5 were just like nobody Purdue cares about. But they just said, okay, we're allocating all effort to these games. The rest, that's exam time, boys. Go study.
So they're basically treating football as an RPG, and you only have so many points that you can allocate.
Exactly. Do you know, like, you don't get to the moon by focusing on every single detail with 100% effort, right? No, man, you just rig up a tin can, throw that thing up there.
I think the point is more that to get to the moon, you have to, like, go as spare as possible. Weight matters, and you can't, like, be you can't be held down by things like, well, it'd be nice to have an Illinois win. Nah, if there's not room for an Illinois win to get to the moon, throw it out. That's an Illinois loss now, baby.
You know, the guy I really identify with on the moon missions are particularly the, you know, like, the first landing is Michael Collins, the guy who's up in the ship.
The guy who took the picture.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the guy who's, you know, at one point was the furthest away anybody's ever been from another human being. Because the minute that the two of them, Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, got back in the ship, I would be messing with them so hard. I would just be like,
guys, you've been gone for 12 years.
Yeah. Am I really Michael Collins? How do you know that?
I would interstellar the shit out of them.
Yeah, he should have brought, like, a gorilla mask or something.
Yeah, or a beard, right? Like a long Rip Van Winkle beard. Guys, no!
Are you mad? I am your daughter.
I don't need to sleep anymore.
I think my favorite Michael Collins thing is people are like, didn't you get so lonely up there? And he's like, what? No, it was awesome.
It's like, have you met Neil Armstrong?
What makes these two people have been pooping next to your head for like a week? Yeah, you're thrilled to get some alone time.
Like, Buzz Aldrin is like space Jim Carrey, and Neil Armstrong doesn't speak. It was great.
It's like, what, y'all are back? Oh God.
Mm-hmm. Also in week 1, number 9 Alabama loses at home, or, well, sort of at home at Legion Field to number
just
8,
like going to space. This never happened.
To number yes. 8 to number 18 Boston College. Bama blew a 17-point lead in the third quarter of this game.
17
yep.
points?
Yep.
I'm full cat thinks that's shit.
I'm sure that went over really well with the fans back home.
Don't worry. It's going to get worse for Bama.
Oh, really? Yeah,
oh,
great.
Thank God.
Number 12 Arizona State loses at home to unranked Oklahoma State 45-3.
At home?
Is that bad?
Yeah, at home. Now, to be fair, so Arizona State was ranked 12th, but this was a year after they went 6-4-1. So, like, I don't know. I don't understand anything. Week 2, number 3 Michigan, coasting after, you may recall, just beating the number 1 team in the country, Miami, at home against Washington. they lose 20-11 in a game that isn't as close as it sounds and is so they play so poorly on the offensive line that Bojan Buckler says if it gets any worse, he's going to go out and play left tackle.
Ah, oh, they're old Bojambo.
Number 5, Iowa, loses at home to number 12, Penn State. It's the only road game Penn State won all year, and it is like every other Penn State-Iowa ending you've ever seen. It comes down to late in the game. Iowa has a 4th-and-1 on the Penn State 29. They're down 3. There's 2 minutes left. They don't convert. This is also a reminder that independent Penn State was way more interesting than Big Ten member Penn State. Here's some of who they played this season. Iowa, Texas, Alabama, West Virginia, Boston College, Notre Dame, and Pitt. Like, I would much rather watch that Penn State season than them going through the Big Ten motions now. I said Alabama was going to have it get worse. It got worse. Number 19, Alabama loses to unranked Georgia Tech.
Oof.
And in the process, in larger context, in Bama's first 5 games of 1984, they go 1-4. The 4 losses are the Boston College game we talked about, this Georgia Tech game, which they lost 16-6, a 9-point home loss to Vanderbilt, and a 10-point loss to Georgia at Legion Field. This wound up being Bama's first losing season since 1957 and ended a 25-year bowl streak for the Tide. I cannot imagine a coach now who would survive a 1-4 start at Alabama.
I don't know about 1-3, man. Like, maybe if it was Nick Saban and Nick was like, I'm going through some stuff, y'all. I'm just not feeling it. They'd be like, you earned that. That's fine.
Wait, is this how Alabama finally comes to, like, recognize that mental health treatment, that there's no stigma attached to mental health?
No.
Can you imagine how fast we could get that entire population to swerve like a school of tuna if Nick was like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy has really helped me through a lot of things. And they're like, hell yeah, Nick, get your feelings out. Yeah, let's cry.
Depression is real.
Yeah.
Week 3, number 2 Clemson loses to number 20 Georgia. This doesn't matter a ton because Clemson was on probation this year anyway. But Georgia won this game 23-20 on a 60-yard field goal with 11 seconds left after coming down from after coming back from being down 20-6 at halftime. Number 4 Miami loses at home to number 15 Florida State. And so that means Miami has done the following in their September: beaten the number 1 team in the country, beaten an in-state rival easily. They beat Florida 32-20 at Tampa Stadium. Yum. Lost as the number 1 team, the Michigan game we talked about, and gotten stomped by an in-state rival. Bernie Kosar got benched in the 3rd quarter of this game, and Miami only scored, I think the final score of this game was 38-3. Miami kicked that field goal when they were already down 3 scores. Great job. Number 18, West Virginia loses at home to unranked Maryland, a team that has lost at home to this. Maryland at this point has lost at home to Syracuse and Vanderbilt, and then they go on the road to Morgantown and give West Virginia its first L of the year. Week 4, to wrap it up, probably the biggest, dumbest, craziest upset of early 1984. Number 1, Nebraska loses on the road. I will get... Spencer or Holly, I will give either of you $5 if you can tell me who this opponent is.
Give me the give me our context one more time.
This is number 1 Nebraska losing on the road in week 4 in a game. I'll give you one more piece of information. A game that aired on USA Network.
Damn.
Oh shit, yeah.
In week 4?
Was it hosted by a sexy nurse?
I'm going to go, if it was 84 and it was Nebraska and we're talking a weird loss.
Yeah.
Illinois. I don't know.
Bright colors.
Syracuse.
Oh,
Syracuse the week before at home had been shut out by Rutgers 19-0. And then they turned around and beat number 1 Nebraska. Tom Osborne, Nebraska. This was the first time Nebraska had been held to one touchdown. They scored, I think, 9 points in this game, and the other 2 were a safety Syracuse gave them at the end of the game for no, just, you know, to have it be done with. This is the first time they've been held to one offensive touchdown since 1981, and they only put up 214 yards of offense in this game. And it was only on USA Network. Characters, welcome. Number 12, Georgia loses to unranked South Carolina. Gosh, it'd be a shame if that happened this year. Who's to say what year I'm talking about? Doesn't matter. That's
I believe if that's 84, are we talking that would be the Black Magic uniforms. This is the first time South Carolina wears black. And this is, by the way, all South Carolina doing really well. You're like, oh yeah, man, Joe Morrison's got them cooking. Yeah, go look at what Joe Morrison and that coaching staff was doing with the players. Might have been some chemical enhancement there.
That's fine. In the 80s, that doesn't matter.
No, it's called magic.
It's called vitamins.
1984 South Carolina was, for whatever reason you may determine, a really good team. They're an independent at this point. They beat Georgia, Notre Dame, Florida State, and Clemson. And then the week before Thanksgiving is the number two team. They lost on the road
to Navy.
To a sub-500 Navy team. Like, there was a real path for South Carolina to play, to potentially win the national championship, because if they beat Navy and they win their bowl game, their case is, they're undefeated and their case is undoubtedly stronger than BYU's at that point.
Yeah, by the way, the coach of that team, Joe Morrison, also had his mistress followed him along with his wife to Columbia, South Carolina. 5 years later, he will die in the shower after a racquetball game, as the NCAA and other authorities converge on Columbia to drop the hammer on the South Carolina Gamecocks program. It's perfect. It's the most South Carolina story ever. Most people don't know it because it happened back in the basic cable days.
Because it involves racquetball.
Yeah.
Number 13, Clemson in week four, lost to number 18, Georgia Tech. Clemson came back from down 21-0 to tie this game, but then Georgia Tech scores a touchdown with 33 seconds left. Clemson, at this point, has all three timeouts, and they fuck up the squib kick. Georgia Tech recovers it. Clemson basically doesn't get the ball back to try and tie this game and send it to overtime. Idiots.
The old botched squib.
For some reason, you know how sometimes you're like, wow, this game from 3 years ago, I can't find it anywhere on YouTube? This whole game is on YouTube. It's great. Don't watch it. Number 15, USC, loses at home to unranked LSU with a new head coach. They're coming off a 4-7 year. The only thing I want to say about this, and then I'm done with my spiel on 84, this is from a Sports Illustrated article about this game. Afterwards, a Tiger fan poked his head into the team bus and said, "Coach, I just want to let you know we're with you," said the man solemnly. "For now, at least." Yeah, I mean, 84 is fucking wild. 84 was just like a total mess of a year.
To me, 84 is in one way an example of how we would like to see the non-power, the mid-major, the group of five, whatever you want to call them, those teams, we'd like to see them get actual shots and actual consideration when they go undefeated. At the same time, this BYU team was not anything that anyone could consider especially elite. I think in the playoff era, this is a team that you would love to see them get the 4 seed.
Right.
You know, like a 2017 UCF, you would like to see that team get a shot as a 4 seed. As a 1 seed, no. No. But because of the way the media polls work, especially back in the 80s, is if you get one good win, you now have a floor. You will only climb as you continue to win. So BYU beats that shitty number 3 Pitt, and they're locked in with a floor of number 13, and then they move up as other teams lose. By the end of the year, they're the only team with a 0 in the loss column, so shit, I don't know. I guess they're the champ. Whereas if you put them in a playoff, they would be an underdog to, like, Nebraska. If they beat Nebraska or Oklahoma, then they're going to be an underdog. Yeah, Washington is your most likely national champ.
Yep.
If Florida isn't on a bowl ban, Florida is your most likely national champ. So now we have a situation where if we'd had a playoff, we have, instead of a first-time champ and a non-power for the first time and, you know, maybe until the end of time, we have a team that was going to win another title within the next decade anyway. And suddenly, even 1984, even the year that started with all this mayhem and chaos and all, it's as chalky as everything else around it.
Now, here's why it was good that it worked out this way. Because They play Michigan in the Holiday Bowl, as you said, a 500 Michigan team. And going into that, Bo Schembechler is basically like saying a lot of these things out loud. Like, I don't think BYU is that good. I think like we've faced tougher defenses, tougher passing attacks, whatever. They blow a lead in the fourth. Michigan blows a lead in the fourth quarter of this game. BYU wins, holds on to number one. And afterwards, Bo Schembechler says, Brigham Young should be outlawed. Absolutely outlawed. Why? Because they hold too much. That's basically his complaint and his basis for outlawing either a religious figure or a football team or a university or all three. Hard to say. Bo Schembechler was the crankiest man in the world, and I love it.
Yeah, didn't they have a whole actual war about whether to outlaw Brigham Young? Like... 200 years ago or whatever?
This has already been covered, Bo.
I don't know, but if it took winning a battle in Pasadena, Schembechler wasn't doing it.
Oh. Yeah. Not awesome in Southern California.
We'll fight you in the Rose Bowl, Bo Schembechler. No!
We'll fight you on the West Coast. Shit. Outfoxed again.
So that's 84. I ran through it quickly because there's just a lot there, and I don't want to take any more time from my wonderful colleagues.
No, we're fine. We're on course here. With 84, the thing is like, we didn't have a playoff. Therefore, we had a wacky ending. Therefore, the whole season is viewed as good and beautiful. Whereas if we'd had a playoff, it would have funneled everything toward one of the actual good teams. And we would say, oh, how boring. Oh, how boring. A big power won it. Which is kind of the situation we're in right now in real life, where the playoff funnels everything towards the same two teams. Even if they happen to drop a game, you know, they get a second life, a second wind. If we go back to the 1970s, then we see an actual extreme of what actual chalky football looks like. Like anyone who looks right now and sees Clemson, Bama, Clemson, Bama, Clemson, Bama, this is ahistorical. This is unique. This is weird. No, not even close. Go back to the 1970s for an extreme. If you apply a playoff to the 1970s, every single fucking year is Alabama, Notre Dame, USC, Ohio State, Oklahoma, over and over and over. Texas and Michigan would be your curveball teams. So the fun of going back and looking at this shit is like getting to look at it with and without that playoff lens that we have right now. Because it really skews and filters things in fascinating ways. In the 70s, on the subject of blood weeks, we're not just chalking on that year-to-year basis where it's the same fucking powers every single season. They also had, you know, after going back through every year looking for blood weeks, every decade looking for blood weeks, the 70s are just light on them. It barely ever happened, except for one year when we had two in a row, which was 1974.
Yeah, in 1974... when you get into September, as the season lurches to a start, one week at a time, we kind of had to break up the games when you look at them, because there's your week two, which is really week two in quotes, and week three, which is week three in quotes, because they don't exactly match up the way you wanted to, but there is a ton of turnover. And I'm not just talking for like upsets where one team is beating another team. I mean, one where one team beats another team and then immediately drops the ball the next week, right? Where you go, haha, now they've beaten that team, they're going to lose. No, no, no. That happened. Looking at you, Wisconsin. We should just start with them, because number four Nebraska rolls into Camp Randall to play Wisconsin, a team that they should annihilate with a powerful rushing attack. And they do get like around 260 yards rushing. And they lead for all but 3 minutes and 29 seconds of the game. Unfortunately for Nebraska, the last 3 minutes and 29 seconds are the part that they decided to give up the lead on, because what's a classic Badger win? That's right. One that's decided by powerful long-range passing. It was a 79-yard TD with 3 minutes and 29 seconds against the Blackshirts. And they win 21-20. Because this is 1974, a little harder to find facts about this than it might be for 84-08. That still didn't keep me from finding out that the name of Wisconsin's running back at the time was Larry Canada. Larry Canada. Like, what do we think of when we think of
terrifying?
Power in What are you doing? I'm bringing okay canned beer and socialized health care to your goal line.
This is like the character who got cut from Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yeah, what does he do? He's very polite. Exceedingly polite. Didn't even score the winning touchdown. He left that to a wide receiver. Wait a guy. Nebraska, by the way, in this game, 47 yards passing. Not that that's a surprise. I'd just like to remind you what it was like to be punched in the face by a classic Tom Osborne offense for four quarters. So number four, Nebraska, drops in week two. Instantly drops a game. That leaves, a dependable program that never disappoints, like LSU. They're playing in Baton Rouge against Texas A&M. And they lose this one 21-14. Remember, this was a bitter rivalry before we woke it back up.
Stop doing that.
Yeah, this you should have let this sleep with the ancients. Instead, you moved the stone off the sarcophagus and let this mummy free.
Why'd you do that? Now it's got anxiety.
Hey, cool idol. Is it okay if I take it home?
Perfectly good mummy. This is like, y'all remember last year when they opened up that dark sarcophagus in the desert?
Yeah.
And there was a mysterious red liquid inside it and a change.org petition to let people drink from the sarcophagus and gain its powers. That's actually a side point to the guy I'm remembering, which was the guy who has never seen any movies, who went immediately on BBC right after this and said, you know, people talk a lot about curses, but I stuck my entire head in the sarcophagus and I'm fine. I'm like, motherfucker, have you watched television? In your life, have you watched television?
So this would be the equivalent of LSU being like, hey, we're going to put our head in this Aggie. What could go wrong?
Ew.
Yeah, that's not. Strike that.
Nope.
Let's revise that.
Nope.
We can go back, right?
It stays.
Nope.
It stays. Now it's canon. You got your head stuck in it.
21-14, the Aggies go in there.
Are you calling the Aggies your personal honeypot?
The Aggies go in there.
Oh, God. Death Valley. Wait, it gets worse! It's just crevices as far as the eye can see.
No! No!
So hot! So humid!
Oh, that. Hey, you did just have an enormous rash.
The speaking of an enormous
night,
rash,
that's
it never rains in Tiger Stadium.
Oh, God.
Number seven LSU
neck.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
Number seven LSU immediately spits the bit and blows their ranking. It used to be a lot easier to.
What are you doing?
Just keeping it going.
Wait, what?
It's the 70s.
No.
Hey, it's the 70s.
Stop doing that.
This is becoming a body horror episode.
It's the 70s.
It's a home loss in Baton Rouge. It's always a body horror episode, Ben.
There are teeth growing out of my calves.
It's totally natural.
They're delicious.
Ah.
Should know this, by the way, because names are the one thing you can find from 1974. LSU's quarterback, Billy Broussard.
And thank you, God.
Who's he backed up by? Carl Otis Trimble. Outstanding. That leaves, that's number seven down in 1 week. How about number eight?
Why would you go by Carl if you had Otis sitting right there?
I assume the Otis is in quotes.
I would prefer that the Carl was in quotes. I'm Carl Otis Trimble.
He should be
sure
a special.
It's not Carl Otis.
Carl Otis.
Ooh. That sounds like a kind of hothouse flower.
Yeah, and his daughter, Carlotisa.
Oh,
Carlotisa. That leaves number eight.
I love it when you call me
Carlotisa. This leaves number eight, Penn State. Who, Ryan, you're right. Independent Penn State, a much more interesting football team.
Way more fun.
Yeah, they should really go back to that because they ended up having these fascinating schedules, like where they played an unranked Navy team and they played them at home, right? Comfy, easy win. Nope. Monsoon swept through. There are conflicting reports about the total number of fumbles in this game. Nice. Penn State definitely lost two of them. There are reports that they fumbled up to nine times.
What do you mean up to nine?
Okay. Based on some eyewitness reports and articles.
Ah.
And a couple of forum discussions, because that's what I had to do for some of these games, was rely on people
old.
Think they fumbled nine times. Anyway, they lost two, missed four field goals, and Joe Paterno was so desperate for points in this game that after Navy put together a voyage of a drive to score a touchdown in the second quarter, Penn State responded on the next drive, and with the score at 7-6 in the second quarter, Joe Paterno went for two. That's how bad the rain was, and that's how much they were convinced that they were never getting near the end zone again. They miss it. Missing the two-point conversion ends a 21-game Penn State win streak, and Navy wins 7-6. Surely in week two, number 10 could stand up to things. Nope. Frank Broyles' Arkansas team at home facing an unranked Oklahoma State. Yeah, they get blasted 26-7 by the Cowboys. Arkansas also loses to Baylor that year. If you're wondering, oh man, that must be one of the two times in the history of Baylor football that they were good. That's correct. Grant Taff is there, and they go 8-4 that year. The Cowboys, by the way, and like I said, I think it was easier to get ranked back in the 70s. The Cowboys go from unranked to 12.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, you know what they immediately do with that 12 ranking? Boom! Shoot themselves in the foot by losing to that Baylor team, 31-14.
Isn't that shit so much better than now, where you start with the preseason rankings and it's like, oh, you lost by 12 week one. It's like, whew, we're going to have to drop you four spots for that. Sorry.
Yeah, you were saying it was the 70s, by the way?
Like, in the 70s, 3-0 Cal that's beaten Washington is the number four team in the nation. And that's insane and great. We should do that.
Same week. We're not even out of that week yet. Week quote two, unquote. That would be UCLA. Number 12, UCLA, being coached at this time by Dick Vermeil. You may remember that name. He's a former Kansas City coach. And he was the coach of the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams, and he was also the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles the time they made the Super Bowl, but didn't win it, right? With Ron Jaworski at quarterback. That Dick Vermeil. He's coaching UCLA at the time, and this game has the best quote that I found in any of this research, any of it. There's a couple of good quotes. This one has the best one. This is a terrible Iowa team. Awful. Like, they are as bad and unwatchable as we joke about Iowa being good and unwatchable right
Wait,
now.
Wait, is this the quote?
No.
Okay.
There's better.
I was like, God yeah, damn, this is spicy shit.
I'm going to get there.
Dick Vermeil had to say.
Yeah. Iowa, by the way, going into this game in Kinnick, they had lost 12 in a row.
Outstanding.
Yeah. All right. UCLA fumbles 6 times in this game. They lose 3 of them. All right. And Iowa wins 21-10. Fans tear down the goalposts. And in the locker room post-game, in the pink locker room, it's not pink at the time. Hayden Fry painted it in the 80s. But, you know, indulge me with the fictional licensing.
Haha, like a cervix.
Uh-huh.
Pink like a cervix from which you emerge into the world naked and screaming.
Speaking of naked and screaming, Dick Vermeil post-game. he gets his team together and I guess as a real motivator of men, Dick Vermeil says, gentlemen, you've just lost to the worst team in America.
Shit, yeah.
And Dick Vermeil was like, I think, like, kind of thought as a fairly nice guy, right?
No,
like,
no. Philly, he was okay.
Am I thinking of, like, later?
Oh, you're thinking later Dick Vermeil.
Dick Vermeil? Okay.
No, Dick Vermeil is the guy who made the two-point conversion chart that everyone uses because he didn't want any piece of the game to be left up to chance. He was a taskmaster. He was a robot. So this totally makes sense for, like, young Dick Vermeil, who later became the kindly grandfather that you remember from Kansas City,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And from St. Louis. No, this man is driven, cold, and ruthless. And
so Dick Vermeil is basically like, oh, Grandpa, he's such a nice man. It's like, yep, he made all his money denying insurance claims in the 50s.
He'll give you a Werther's. So surely in the same week, number 14, playing a pitiful, unranked Florida team, just switching to running the wishbone. Surely Maryland can... No. They lose to an unranked Florida team.
Where is this game?
This game is in Florida. Okay. So there is that. It's a 17-10 victory for the Florida Gators. They are running the wishbone under future University of Tennessee athletic director and then Gators coach Doug Dickey. So 14 drops a game here. Stanford at 19. What could be more dependable than Stanford playing an unranked Illinois team. Remember, Illinois, we've always been awful. Except this day, because the Illini blasted them 41-7 with a guy named Chubby Phillips at running back.
Fuck yes.
Chubby Phillips. This whole thing, by the way, you knew it was going to happen because the game program for Stanford that day shows a Stanford player in a tackle where it looks very much like he's taking a helmet to the nuts. So just kind of had to know this was coming.
Well, that's like the Heisman Trophy.
Sticks one in the Chubblies.
The Heisman Trophy kind of looks like that, doesn't it?
I don't know why we're in the 30s now. I just decided.
It's the pose of excellence when you can take two but stay at number one.
Yeah. Rolling bandages on the sidelines for the boys in the Crimean War.
And then, in case week two wasn't bad enough, that's a ranked Houston. It was number 18 Stanford at home. And then it was a number 19 Houston loses to an unranked Miami team, 20-3. The Miami Hurricanes then, of course, take all of that momentum, move forward, and 2 weeks later, they lose to Auburn 3-0. So, in other words, Auburn's always been that.
Auburn's always been this way.
Yeah. Moving on to number three, week three, just in case we didn't have enough chaos, and this is where we get to the really good stuff. Notre Dame is number two. They are playing an unranked Purdue in South Bend and come out there as favorites. Ara Parseghian, fresh off a national title. And what do? They allow 24 points in the first quarter to Purdue and lose 31-20. The Sports Illustrated article for this is a prosecutable felony in terms of overwrought sports writing. I will only share one word from this entire thing. At this point, the writer for Sports Illustrated listed them as the spoiler makers.
Oh, God. Hey, how many games do you think 74 Purdue won besides this game?
I believe they went 6-4?
4-6-1.
4-6-1. All right.
Ah, so that's different.
Yeah, 4-6-1. Dyslexically, I was almost right. It's interesting that you mentioned that 1984 Purdue win over Notre Dame didn't take place in South Bend. Purdue beats Notre Dame in South Bend in 74. When's the next time they win? 2004. They didn't beat the Irish again until 2004.
It's Purdue that's Pennywise.
Ooh. They're back. Don't go near the sewer. There's math in there.
I mean, we've all seen their mascot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so that's number two going down that week. Number six, Texas playing a mediocre Texas Tech team with a freshman Earl Campbell. Yeah, they lose 26-3. Just blow it. Texas Tech's actually like a six-win team that year. They don't turn out to be that bad. But at the time, out of nowhere, blowing a game in Lubbock 26-3. This leads to number seven, Arizona State. At that time, coached by maybe my favorite future Pac-12 team coach ever, Frank Cush, who the field is currently named for. Frank Cush.
Ah.
K-U-S-H. Frank Cush.
That's what I thought you said.
They lose 9-0 to Mizzou. God, that had to be.
How interesting.
Would you rather watch 3-0 or 9-0? I'd rather watch 3-0. That's just exquisitely bad.
No, I'd rather watch 9-0 because I think it creates more more anxiety on the part of the team that's behind.
I'd rather watch 3-0 because 9-0 seems to portend that things might change at some point, and 3-0 gives it to you like it is.
I like 9-0 because you can joke about it being a three-score game.
Ah.
Or in some schools, that's a five-score game?
That's a five-score game.
Five-score game for some schools? Yeah. Mm. Number eight, Pitt. That's right. Doesn't it just roll off the tongue? Ah. Number eight, Pitt. Lost at home.
Clearly, there's an error here that needs to be fixed.
there actually is, because if you look at the score in the New York Times archive for this, it says Pittsburgh falls 16-79 to the Trojans. It's like, God, that's a rugby score. Good God. No, it was 16-7. There's just some sort of coding error. In more crimes against sports writing, this is the subheader for the 16-7 Trojans victory over the ranked 8 Pitt Panthers. For connoisseurs of the hipper dipper, the zigzag and the shoulder
fake. Jesus Christ, what?
Mr. Davis of USC outdistanced Mr. Dorsett of Pitt 149 yards to 59. But much of the credit for the Trojans 16-7 win belonged to his cohorts.
I'm glad Grant Rice is dead.
It gets so much worse, man. Like, so much worse. There's another one here. And the fabulous TD, who made All-America as a freshman, who gained 200 yards against Notre Dame, who could dodge between the bullets on a machine gun practice range. It wouldn't have been an even jazzier promotion, except the NCAA cracked down at the last minute. And USC and Pitt also had to suit up all those dull tackles, fullbackers, linebackers, and have a regular football game. That's one sentence. One sentence. In all of this, right?
Good editors are to be trusted.
Yeah, you can turn up. This was, by the way, in the classic era of SI. For connoisseurs of the hipper dipper, the zigzag and the shoulder faint.
Mr. Davis of USC. I need you to stop.
Which one?
I need everyone to stop.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Pitt.
Thank you.
I think I just had a small panic attack.
You just got through saying you'd rather watch a 3-0 or 9-0 game because it's more anxiety.
Yeah, I changed my mind.
I have good lung capacity. That's like a 9 breath opening paragraph. I'm so mad at USC.
Reading
for
that is
happen.
The real end of the deep.
It is.
Who wrote that?
Don't worry about it.
I want to know.
It was
name them and shame them.
Joe Jarris.
What the hell?
Joe Jarris.
Asshole.
Number 11, Wisconsin. Remember Wisconsin? Fresh off that upset. Remember, if you upset anyone, they just sort of put you in those like preteen, sort of 11
just
or 12.
Take their spot.
I found somebody on Twitter who's not that Joe Jarris, but his bio is just a dude trying to wrap his problems away. And how.
But yeah, Wisconsin, fresh off that upset, immediately falls to 11. All of that momentum, they're playing Colorado, and they lose 24-21.
I have found Joe Jarris's photo. It's exactly the kind of person you think would say something like that.
Yeah, he's got the 80s power glasses and a gigantic tie knot.
Oh,
yeah.
A wise guy.
Number 12, Oklahoma State. Again, remember, this is the power of...
Powered by victory!
Yeah, powered by victory. What could they do? What waits for them? Yeah, that's right. They rank 12 because that's the upset slot. They immediately drop a game to Baylor. And then number 14, Tennessee. Man, what could go wrong?
Nothing.
When you're depending on Tennessee to
win
a game.
Was this? I wasn't alive. I'm not taking credit for that.
Yeah, guess who they're playing, by the way? They're playing Auburn.
I would prefer not to guess.
You don't even have to, like, I could have just gone into this blind. They would be like, let's see. This is Auburn in a game they're not supposed to win against a ranked team. Yeah. Yeah, they ruined it, by the way. They completely ruined it. Upsetting the Tennessee Volunteers. Now, the conclusion in this is the fun part when you talk about 1974, because we're making it sound like 1974 was this, like, after these pivotal 2 weeks of upsets and upheavals, like it was going to be super controversial, right? Like, oh yeah, there's no telling what's going to happen. You start off with that preseason poll of Oklahoma at 1, Ohio State at 2, Notre Dame at 3, Alabama at 4, USC 5, Michigan 6, Nebraska 7, Penn State 8, LSU 9, and Texas 10. That final poll, when you look at it, man, it's not that much different. Not a whole lot moves. Number 1's Oklahoma. Number 2 is USC. Number 3 is Michigan. Number 4 is Ohio State. Number 5 is Alabama. Number 6 is Penn State. Does this all sound familiar?
Yeah.
It should sound very familiar. All of this happened and nothing shifted. Absolutely nothing. Just rearranged the deck chairs. The best part about the 1974 season is this. That in all of this, you may not have heard the name Oklahoma a lot. There's a reason. Oklahoma wins
Oklahoma wins all of their games.
Oklahoma was actually still at the bottom of the ocean at this time.
It was, and it surfaced, and the king of Atlantis was Barry Switzer.
Can I digress very quickly to talk about the
rule? Actually, he totally would chain his daughter to a rock.
Can I digress to talk about the rule changes for the 74 season?
Yeah, sure.
You had to wear shoulder pads for the first time.
Yes, shoulder pads are required equipment for all players. Prior to this, kickers and wide receivers frequently played without them. Players who enter the field are required to remain for one play, and players who leave the field are required to stay on the bench for one play. That ended the practice of sending messenger players in to send in the plays, who then left without participating in said play. And my favorite one, successful field goals must now travel between the uprights. Previously, a field goal was declared good if the ball went over an upright, which apparently is still the rule in the NFL. Yeah. And most importantly, that rule became important in the 1974 Ohio State-Michigan game, where what would have been Michigan's game-winning field goal was declared no good because it went over the left upright instead of inside.
So three things here. One, Oklahoma, clearly the best team, towered above everyone else, but there is some fun there because they were NCAA probation bowl banned from the postseason and the AP poll. So... Mm-hmm. Oklahoma being Oklahoma, getting student athletes compensated. If we had a playoff, it would have been Bama versus USC, boring, and Ohio State Michigan rematch, so they can figure out their field goal lasers problem. So your title game is probably Bama versus Ohio State, and so either way, your national champ is, you know, as of now, it's Oklahoma, fair and square. If we had a playoff, it's probably Alabama. Either way, we found all these wacky ball moments of joy buried underneath the top of the standings. It's like there's a lesson here.
That was, can I give you Barry Switzer, by the way, who, it should be pointed out, when did Oklahoma go on a bowl ban and probation under Barry Switzer? Year two, baby! Year two!
Starting hot.
Barry Switzer, two crimes!
I'm just getting this out of the way early, setting a tone. You know what? He probably thought of it that way, too. He was probably like, you know what? I want everybody to know. Best deal, best compensation, best benefits. Oklahoma Sooners.
I like to imagine that Barry Switzer is McGruff the Crime Dog's brother. And they're just not alike in any way.
McGruff the Do Crimes Dog?
Yeah. Barry the
Have a mascot?
Barry the
Bam. Did we just create our mascot, the Duke Grimes dog?
I just want these students to know, come on down. We got doorbuster deals. We got a grand opening here in Norman.
Your mama need a new trailer? We got trailers. We got all kinds of trailers. Single
these Trans Ams are limited edition. Wink, wink, they're not.
Do you want a dorm room with a jacuzzi? Fine. Take my house. I have 17 of them.
First five-star quarterback in the doors gets an oil rig.
Let me give you Barry Switzer at the age of 75 talking about this, and it's absolutely magnificent. He said, "You might be going to a bowl game," said Switzer, of OU's opponents that season, "but everybody is going to know you got your ass kicked by Oklahoma when you got there, and that's what we did."
So basically, Barry Switzer is the uninvited person at the wedding who shows up. He's like, "You might be marrying her, but I fucked her first."
Oh yeah, no, he's showing up at the wedding to be like, "Yeah, I got those drawers." Yeah, that was it. This was a team that knew they were never going. Like, Bedlam was the last game they played, and they still got the UPI number one. Based on this, because
I love that the coaches poll is like, we don't listen to the cops. Fuck that. We all know who's number one here. The AP poll is meanwhile dutifully taking orders. Bunch of fucking nerds.
The instructions on the packet said specifically not to rank Oklahoma.
Yeah, why don't you do journalism? Rank Oklahoma.
That was a terrifying series of noises.
Thank you. Yeah, 74 is great because it's crime pays. Like, that's 74.
Do crime, get paid, Oklahoma football.
Woo! Boomer.
I mean, that is sort of what Land Thieves is all about, isn't it?
Start to finish, baby.
Boomer Toonses.
So what's the last on deck is Holly has 2008.
Oh, one that we can all actually remember. Mm-hmm. Especially Spencer. He's quite old. The year was 2008. EDSBS was on WordPress still, I think.
Ugh, yeah.
We're sorry about that. And in week 4 of 2008, a number of things happened. Spencer, I'm going to ask you to pull up the EDSBS post that I know we made for this first game to read when I get to the end of it. It was just a series of headlines, because that is what happens when number one USC holds your Stars and Garters, a ranked USC team, face planted to not ranked Oregon State on a Thursday, which means everybody saw. The Trojans, as we were delighted to report, fell 27-21 to the Beavers in Corvallis. You may recall this also as the Jaquizz Rodgers game. 37 carries, 186 yards, and 2 TDs at 5'6". This was also Oregon State's last, a note here, Oregon State's last prior beating of a number one came in 1967 when they won 3-0 over... anybody? Also USC and OJ. Oregon State was 2-2 at that point and had already lost to a 5-7 Stanford team.
Hell yeah.
That's only the second best. That's, you know what, we may have deleted this post because it was real bad.
Yeah, this was, by the way, if you like missed the heyday of Pete Carroll as a college coach, the best part about Pete Carroll as a college coach was this.
I knew exactly what to Google to pull this post up.
Was this. Asked after the game what happened, he said, I don't know. He always looked, he never had a like, well, that's the better team. He was completely clueless every time USC lost. He's like, well, we knew it was coming. We couldn't stop them. I don't know what's happening.
I'm just going to scroll real quick down this EDSBS post. Trojans can't pull it out. Hungry Beavers suffocate Trojans. Trojans can't get it up for big night with Beavers. Trojans can't come from behind. Falls short. 22 Trojans, no protection. USC to sleep in wet spot. Faced with angry Beavers. Trojans flaccid. Oh, God. Oh, God. These just get worse. I'm not reading the rest of these.
All right.
You wrote these.
My favorite part about this USC
Beavers
season.
Beavers poke surreptitious hole in Trojans, comma, snatch victory.
I hope some people tell us children listen to this show. And again, we've made very clear that they shouldn't do that.
Never. Absolutely never.
My favorite part about USC this year is that after losing this game, they spend
they go 12-1.
They spend the rest of the year not just going 12-1, but furiously trying to just show how strong they are against basically every other team on the schedule.
Did it work? It did not.
Other than a 17-10 win against Arizona on the road, they just pummel everybody. They beat ranked Oregon by 34 points. They beat ranked Cal by two touchdowns. They beat Penn State fairly handily in the Rose Bowl, and it just doesn't matter. They cannot overcome the stink of losing this Oregon State game.
Can I throw in two quick notes on USC?
Please do.
One being in 1974. I had it backwards. The AP poll did the right thing. Oklahoma number one. It was the coaches' poll who were cops. So I apologize to the AP. In 2008, do we know how many national champions in 2008 through 2019 would be favored over 2008 USC in S&P+? The answer is one. 2013 Florida State. It would have 2008 USC over, I think, 2010 Auburn and 2014 Ohio State by 10 points. This team was awesome.
Not on Thursday, they weren't.
And they lost to Oregon State.
Yeah, does this cost them a national title? Yes.
Yes.
It cost them a shot at a national title. Jaquizz Rodgers finishes a run with his helmet off on multiple occasions in this game.
So, let's move on to somebody's favorite game. Number 3, Georgia, at home to number 8, Alabama. First of all, this was the black jersey game. UGA wore black jerseys. That was still happening. It finished 41-30, but I need to remind you all that it was 31-0 at the half. This was also notable for being the last time John Parker Wilson scared anyone. He only passed 16 times. And Knowshon had 34 yards of rushing. But the reason that I keep coming back to this game is it comes closest to describing everything that I love-hate about Alabama football, because there's a Dan Wetzel piece from the Alabama locker room after this game that is maybe my favorite bit of sports writing of all time. We highlighted bad sports writing, so let's highlight good sports writing. It is 5 lines long. It is 5 one-sentence paragraphs long, this section, and I'm just going to read here. There were even the he here is Saban. There were even conflicting reports that he smiled in the victorious locker room. Yes, he smiled and told us he loved us, Reamer said. No, said cornerback Javier Arenas. Maybe, laughed quarterback John Parker Wilson. I'm excited, said Saban, looking not the least bit excited. This is my favorite thing that's ever happened in a locker room. Alabama players arguing over whether it's okay to let an outsider know that Saban told the team he loved them.
This is the game that effectively kicks off a 10-year campaign to win 5 national titles at Alabama. Yeah, and this is the one where he says, I'm excited.
I'm excited. But I love the image of Javier Arenas, not exactly a dude that you want to meet in the open field, backing away from the notion that Saban told the team he loved them. No, he didn't. I love that he's the one who's like, guys, cut it out, cut it out.
I was going to ask you, would losing one game to a team that ultimately doesn't do anything with it, would that disqualify everyone from a national title in 2008?
Interesting.
Just asking.
Moving on, number 4, Florida lost at home to unranked Ole Miss. Spencer, do you remember anything in particular about this game in regards to a bet that we might have made?
No, don't remember a thing.
You don't remember a special uniform that Florida wore for this game?
No, not a thing.
Okay, then I guess we won't talk about it.
No.
Ole Miss had 10 first downs. Florida had 24. The final was 31-30 on a missed extra point. Florida had 3 turnovers. Tim Tebow, a quarterback of some renown, a tight end of some renown, fumbled away a possession, missed 2 wide open receivers on the last drive. That's out of character for him. And missed a crucial 4th-and-1 at the end. Houston Nutt, quoting after the game, we can build on this. 3 years later, I am fired. Lost a school record 12 straight SEC games to close. Florida won the national title anyway, by the way, and nothing at all went wrong after that.
Yep, we were fine.
Yeah.
Nothing. This game, by the way, like, you want to talk about, like, means nothing. Didn't stop Florida from winning a national title. Didn't stop Florida from becoming a completely dysfunctional, like...
Is arguably a bigger part of Florida lore than Ole Miss lore because of the damn speech.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was there a speech?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, God. No, let's go on to the next game. I don't want to talk about the speech. I would rather talk about the jerseys that Florida wore for this game. Oh, no, wait. This wasn't that Ole Miss game. I'm thinking of a different Ole Miss loss. We have bet on a lot of Ole Miss...
Let's never bet.
Wait, is this my superpower? Is my superpower just knowing when Ole Miss is going to beat Florida? Because that's all I ever predict.
My superpower is not seeing it coming.
Weird.
That's
it. Only works for Florida Ole Miss. I can't seem to generate it for anything else. No,
Spencer
this is not
Daredevil.
This is not the orange jersey game.
Daredevil in shorts.
No. All right. Anyway, also that week. Oh God, this was a spicy week. Number 9, Wisconsin lost to unranked Michigan. Upstart Michigan Wolverines won 27-25. The Wolverines trailed 19-0 at the half and were booed off the field. Wisconsin had 4 turnovers. Michigan had 5, but the Badgers had theirs last. That's what matters.
9 total turnovers.
It just goes to show when you have Stephen Threet and Sam McGuffey, you're never really out of a game, are you?
Yeah, that's my favorite. This is like the ultimate, like, the poop era of Big Ten football, right? Like late 2000s, mid to late 2000s. When you have this Wisconsin team, you're like, can you name anyone else on these teams? Anyone. No one. This is like
talent point.
I could barely remember Sam McGuffey's name. Like I'll not forget three level midnight anytime soon. But anyway, enough said about that. The game that we all want to talk about is number 16 Wake Forest falling out to unranked Navy.
What hath God wrought?
Mentioning this game because Navy won 24-17, but I'm only mentioning this game because Riley Skinner threw as many interceptions in this game as Navy threw passes. Anybody want to guess how many that was?
Four.
Four is correct.
Do you think you can track when the economy is going to crash based on when Wake Forest cracks the top 25?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
No, I didn't. Sell! Economy peaking? Go, Demon Deacon.
Economy Deacon.
The Demon Deacon does sort of look like an evil banker, so.
I'm coming for the farm!
Andy's a Protestant. They ruin everything.
Yeah.
God, man, that's a thought that's going to fester. Sorry. Okay.
Scheming Deacon.
Okay. Number 20. I got two more games that I'm throwing in for because they were both technically in the top 25. This feels less bloody. ECU was ranked for a second, lost to Houston 41-24. Never trust Skip Holtz. Both teams had four turnovers and Houston still won by 17. This was like the ball itself was covered with blood this week. But anyway, I'm bringing it home with number 20 Clemson losing at home to unranked Maryland. You know why? Willie Korn alert.
Willie Korn
was the backup quarterback in this 20-17 loss to the Terps. Clemson blew a lead in the second half, and it was a very important game because Tommy Bowden slipped to 3-2 after this and the opening hammering by Mama, then resigned six games into the season, taking his bitch mentality home with him and opening the door for one Dabo Sweeney. Tommy Bowden, by the way, does anybody want to, Spencer can't guess because he's looking at my notes. Ryan, Jason, do you guys want to guess how many seasons Tommy Bowden was at Clemson? If you count this one as like a half season.
I want to say it's like 7 or 8.
9.5.
Okay, all right.
9.5 seasons for Tommy Bowden. America really is a meritocracy, y'all.
What is the best Clemson record in that stretch? I can look this up. Hold on.
This one, because it got them Dabo Swinney.
That's the best record. So Clemson has 2 9-win seasons in the stretch. In 2003, they went 9-4. That's with a Peach Bowl win in 2007. The other one, they
lost the Chick-fil-A that year.
Yes, yes, and that's the 2017. So yes. Like a very middle of the road ACC team, a very like top middle of the road. If that's a thing, ACC.
I remember that because that was the random Chick-fil-A bowl that went to like triple overtime or something, double overtime.
And how many seasons has Clemson had under Dabo where they have won fewer than 9 games?
Oh, interesting.
One?
Yep, just one in 2010.
Could Dabo have done it without?
Everyone was like, "We got to fire this guy."
Could Dabo have done this without the foundation that Tommy Bowden laid? Could Dabo have started so high up without Tommy Bowden's play?
I think in many ways it's still Tommy Bowden's program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People say that.
Let me give you, by the way, this was when you talk about like Saban rising. This was.
don't say that. He's very sensitive.
He's up to 5'7".
Yeah, he can only rise so far.
The
same and rising like a kid trying to get on the vortex at the traveling carnival.
Remember that this entire thing started with a 34-10 thumping of Clemson in the Georgia Dome, where a couple of things happened. The I believe it was CJ Spiller as a fresh, or no, it's Jacoby Ford. Jacoby Ford was promised the first carry as a recruit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Jacoby Ford. He's promised the first carry against Alabama. He fumbles. Alabama instantly scores off that. Clemson has no pulse for the rest of the game and just lays down and dies for the rest of the game. Like, doesn't, in retrospect, like Clemson is one of the smartest teams to ever play prime to peak era Saban Alabama, because they got a whiff of it and they were like, nah, nah, nah. We'll come back. We've got like 11 more games on the schedule. We're just going to stick to this.
I will give Ryan or Jason $1 million if you can tell me who was quarterback in Clemson that year.
In 2000, what year was this?
Yeah. This was back when all of Clemson's quarterbacks and Auburn's quarterbacks were interchangeable.
Yeah, I got nothing.
And they all said...
Was this a Whitehurst year?
No, this was a Cullen Harper year, who is now a dentist.
Good. Honestly, good for him.
Yeah. Well, he's a dentist in Augusta. Don't get too excited.
Jason, is it fair to say that this is a good example of a chaos week that did not actually, that should have potentially impacted things, but didn't, mostly because...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. One more stat. The reason I brought up Cullen Harper is because his backward scrambling for 28 yards in that Bama game left Clemson with 14 carries for 0 yards on the ground in that game.
They were playing as a scramble, but Cullen Harper got him back to par.
Anyway, please continue.
I mean, I think this was a deeply consequential blood week because, I mean, USC would probably be favored over Florida or Oklahoma in the title game without this. Mm-hmm. Georgia would not have deep, complex emotions about what color jersey it wears to this day. They might have switched jersey colors by now.
No, there's that one cocktail party, though.
I think it's mostly that.
I feel like that would have stuck in their craws a little bit more.
You look at the final AP rankings, which are Florida 1, USC 3, two teams that both lost this week. Who's stuck in the middle between them? Utah, who finished the season undefeated.
What conference were they in?
The other Pac-12.
Pre-power.
Ah, interesting.
Utah was plugging in the power.
Listen,
The Mountain y'all West were is a bringing very good this
conference
up.
This year, so it's fine.
Y'all were bringing this up, and I completely forgot until this second that players were clamoring in the preseason to bring out Georgia's black jerseys for Notre Dame. Wouldn't this be a fine weekend if we spoke that into being on this here Thursday podcast?